Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guests today are Carolyn Ems and Anastasia Close. Carolyn Ems is a founding member of Rainforest Reserve Australia, based in Lake Barine, far north Queensland, which she manages alongside a small group of passionate conservationists with different skill sets, including on-the-ground habitat restoration experts. Here, Rainforest Reserves operates the Tablelands Cassowary Rehabilitation Facility in partnership with the Department of Environment and Science, caring for orphaned and injured cassowaries, rehabilitating them until they're ready for release into the wild. She's also passionate about revegetation, and with the help of her team, has planted over 100,000 native trees to create two wildlife corridors, allowing wildlife to continue seed dispersal and expanding their habitat. Anastasia Close has recently joined Rainforest Reserves Australia as a researcher, copywriter, and website designer to support their work. She's a contemporary artist who's now refocusing her passion on wilderness conservation. So for both of you, first off, thank you for your work in the world. And second, thank you for being on the program.
Thanks so much, Derek. We're really happy to be here.
Thank you, Derek.
Well, thank you. Can you introduce listeners to Chulumbin in Queensland and say what's happening there? Why is that making the news recently?
Yeah, sure. It's Anastasia here. So we became aware of a proposed wind development at Chulumbin quite by accident a few months ago, when a fellow that we know in Chulumbin just happened to mention that there was a proposal to build a 95 turbine wind development on a 78,000 acre parcel of land, which is consists of primarily remnant vegetation. So we just happened to learn through word of mouth that this was happening. And it was such a shock, because we thought that the wind developments up here were done. We've already got two that are currently operational and one that is being built in Caban, which is very close to Ravenshoe as well, quite near Chulumbin. And we were kind of hoping that the developments were done and we could all move on with our lives. And as far as wilderness is concerned, that the impacts were done, there wasn't going to be any further habitat clearance, and that was it. So when we learned of Chulumbin, we really knew that we had to campaign against this development, because we hadn't had a chance to campaign successfully against the previous developments. And as a consequence, we've lost thousands of acres of habitat already. And this is high biodiversity land up here in far north Queensland. I mean, we're talking about species that exist here that do not exist anywhere else on Earth, that are endangered and vulnerable. And their very existence really depends on us conserving the wilderness that they call home. So that started us on a wild ride to get the word out about this proposed development. So maybe Caroline, you'd like to speak to the meetings we've organised and the things that we've done to try and raise awareness about this.
Yes, thank you, Anna. Anna's quite right. But also to add to that, I received a phone call from a local, person that backs onto Caban. He rang me in shock and said, well, you can say goodbye to your magnificent brood frog, because they're just polluting the water, they're land clearing, they're just laying waste at Caban. And we're talking about thousands and thousands of hectares of land, and also the impacts to that whole ecosystem will affect the whole region. But when we talk about the natural values of Chulumbin, which is huge, we're talking about the actual project size, or the area of land mass, is 78,000 acres. And if you're a local, that's 93 times the size of Fitzroy Island, if you could imagine how huge and how vast this landscape is. And of course, the greatest significance, really, and the natural values of Chulumbin, it's not actually rainforest, but it backs on to World Heritage Tully Falls National Park, which is close to where we release cassowaries. And don't forget, cassowaries can move in and out of rainforest into different ecotones, and they're a frugivore. So we can talk about cassowaries later. But with Chulumbin, Perhaps the greatest significance is the wet, sclerophyll forests. They form part of two bioregion corridors of state ecological significance. So, for instance, the Inesley Uplands Eastern Ecotone, and we're talking about the wet tropics region here, and the Western Ecotone, well, of course, you're looking at upland moist eucalypt forests, and then the other ecotone is a band of moist, of dry tropical woodlands that characterise the uplands bioregion. So you've got the two different ecosystems of the wet sclerophyll country and the dry sclerophyll country, open woodlands, and of course it's home to the goshawk, the red goshawk. And they're rare, and they only recently found a nest in 2019 to 2020. And that nest, obviously they can come back to that nest, but it's such a rare and endangered bird. They just have huge wedge-tail eagle-like claws. They're unique, and really we cannot afford to go ahead with this project or allow this project to go ahead, because the wind turbines on this huge project of 95 or 94 that are proposed would just make mincemeat of these magnificent birds, birds of prey. Plus, these ecosystems are home to the greater glider, and they're unique, and they need continuous canopies in a way to glide through the trees. And really, it's going to affect so many other wildlife, such as Ravenshoe is known as the world of possums. So here we have the different possums, such as the green ringtail possum, the lumeroid possum, the red belly glider, the yellow belly glider, all the different gliders. It's just remarkable habitat ecosystems of life. And not to mention all the different frog species, which includes the tapping green-eyed frog. We have those here at Lake Barine, but they're vulnerable. So water quality is also a threat. Then should we talk about the migratory birds that will end up really having to deal with a wall of steel? We're talking about hundreds of kilometres of walls of steel with all the different projects that we've only just found out about. We're talking massive ecocide of a magnitude like bigger than anywhere in the world. Chulumbin is regarded as one of the biggest wind farms in Australia, but now we've just found out about Upper Burdekin, which is four times the size. And when we look at the Great Dividing Range of Australia that connects us from one top of the country on the eastern border of Australia, taking us from North Queensland, Cape York, right down the east coast to Victoria, we have a problem. And not to mention the koalas that are found on this site, because it's eucalypt country as well.
So thank you so much for all that. And I'm wondering if we can back up a little bit, because a lot of listeners are probably not familiar with Australian habitat. Like, when you say glider, I mean, is that like the Australian equivalent of a flying squirrel? And so can you get more basic? And you said eucalypt. So I think that, I mean, sorry to be so stupid, but we hear about eucalyptus trees. Are there a whole bunch of species of eucalyptus trees? Are there a wide variety? And when you say an open forest, does that mean like an open? See, when I think of open forest, if we were all in the United States, when I think of open forest, I think of Colorado, where there might be one tree every 20 feet. And then here where I live in the Redwoods is a closed canopy where a squirrel could literally walk from tree to tree and never touch the ground. So can you back up just a little bit and just sort of give us more of a feel for if we were walking through either or both of those forest types that you were talking about? Because remember, a lot of people are not from Australia. And so they may, you know, and again, it's perfectly fine. But, you know, you laughed when I said, is a glider like a flying squirrel? I mean, I don't know. So educate us on all that, if you don't mind.
Yes, I will try, even though I'm not an ecologist. But we do like to keep abreast of the natural values of the habitats that we're trying to protect. So the greater glider, I guess you could call it like a flying squirrel, if you like. So the greater glider, it expands itself and flies from about 6 meters to another tree. It's amazing. And the trees, the eucalypt trees, or the wet sclerophyll of the wet sclerophyll forests, they're really very tall trees. So when they glide at long distances, and they do need to be, they look, some of the forests, when we talk about open forests, we're probably talking about 4 meters to 6 meters between each tree. Okay, 6 meters is 20 feet. Are we talking imperial in meters?
No, that's great. That's great. It's 6 meters is great. That just gives me an idea what you're talking about. And then, what would the underbrush be when you have 6 meters between a tree? Is there a heavy underbrush, or is it like open grass in between, or is it bare soil? I mean, again, I don't even know.
Yes. Well, we call it scrubland. So there's scrub. There's bushy sort of habitat underneath, and there's grass. So it could be either there's savanna grasslands, in the dry, wet sclerophyll areas, it's dry country, so there would be grasslands and scrub. What we mean by scrub is it would be highly, in drought, it could burn. So it's good to have some cool fires, we call fire management. It's very, and then you've got the wet sclerophyll ecotones. And of course it's more, a different sort of habitat, where it's moist. It's actually very beautiful. I've got some photos of that. So there are different areas that are in the wildlife that are endemic to those ecotones need those habitats in place, and degradation and fragmentation of those ecosystems would spell the death knell and contribute to our already big threats to wildlife. So it's very important that we say no to these developments. And if I can just mention the cultural significance to the Dharawal people, they're actually totally opposed to the wind development going ahead, because their culture really depends. If there's no land left and no of significance and habitat for wildlife, in a sense, that really devalues their culture and the cultural significance that they need for that land to stay as it is, for the trees to stay as they are, to keep it wild. What a lot of people probably don't realise in Australia is that we're talking about, with the wind turbine proposal, they call it green and clean and pretty little windmills that are going to make everything great for us. I don't think a lot of people in Australia realise that the road widths, we're talking about 7 metre wide, 70 metre wide road widths, and up towards 125 metre wide. That's a huge fragmentation. And then for Chulumbin, the proposal is about 174 kilometre roads winding in around the habitats, land clearing. And then once a turbine is prepared, we're talking about the preparation for one turbine is the equivalent of, say, up to 800 cubic metres. If you're in the building industry, you're looking at 40 house blocks or, you know, a huge multitude of factories. And no one's really equating the heavy industrial change of use that is proposed. And it's going to be catastrophic when the actual huge 227 metre high wind turbines and the concrete footings that have to accommodate these massive structures, and then the wind blades being up to 80 metres or 90 metres long, turning at a rate, confusing wildlife. We're going, like, at the moment, Emerald Heights Wind Farm, it has killed over 900, this is only that we know of, 900 microbats. We already know the biggest casualties, and I've got the evidence to show that the casualties, main casualties, will be bats. Also, when we look at, and after talking with some of the Indigenous people, that the cranes, the brolgas, the saurus cranes that fly in from Darwin and or the northern parts of the country, and then looking at the migratory birds and the Atherton Tablelands storks, you might call them, or we call them brolgas and saurus cranes, they'll be just met with a ring of steel. They're priceless wildlife. And I think that we need to put a value. For us, it's priceless because we can't put a price on our wildlife. Extinction is forever for us. So for us, wildlife is priceless. And who's to say that those wildlife are less important than us and our desire at any cost to have electricity when there are other solutions? And they're not even discussing, no one is discussing the ecocide, the environmental impacts. No one is talking about deforestation. Now, if you're really serious about climate change, why are these big industrialists and huge push by certain groups that aren't in our country, they're pushing for industry, in my opinion, they're not pushing really, they're not really dealing with climate change. Otherwise, they would push to stop deforestation now. So we're discovering that this industry, particularly where we are in the wet tropics region and the values of the wet tropics and most of the Great Dividing Range backs on, like where we are in North Queensland, we back on to World Heritage National Parks. It's going to destroy the natural values of our wet tropics region. We have enough wind turbines now, and it would be a disaster for the region economically and for the little town of Ravenshoe region, which is just a little town of only 1,400 people. And they rely on wilderness experiences for people to come and visit that town. There's been businesses set up. And so socially, economically, it might, the wind turbine proposal may suit only a certain amount of people, but basically the subsidies and the developments mainly inert to the developer and a few jobs initially, but it's just going to leave an empty shell for our region. And bearing in mind we're regenerative farmers and looking at the water cycle, it's going to have a major impact on our region's water cycle, on this most ancient land and arguably the driest country on the planet. And I don't think we can afford on so many different levels. We've actually listed three pages of dot points against this development going ahead. It will be a disaster.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes, yeah, so talking of the area being culturally and significant, there are some sacred sites around the area. And so not only is the areas of these ecotones biodiverse in plants and animals, it's home to hundreds of species of wildlife. I haven't listed them all. We're looking at the magnificent brood frog. We're also looking at, obviously, the many bird life that are there. We're looking at untouched wilderness in a way that's going to be cleared. To install these huge turbines, and then they call it green. How can you, I don't know how you could ever justify blasting the sites to blast through rock forms to enable the footings to be to go in for these massive structures. So blasted, removing wildlife so that before the blasting happens, for the roads to be created, etc. Delicate ecosystems will be majorly impacted by the blasting, the noise of the wind turbines. No one has done proper ecological environmental impacts. And that is of great concern. But when we talk about blasting and then the installation of these massive, heavy industrial structures, you can't possibly say and that is green. I don't think people realise that it's already Caban ecosystem is now a heavy industrial construction site. And that's before the wind turbines and the footings even go in. I'm going to hand you to lovely Anna.
Hello again. Look, I just want to set a bit of a mental picture for people who are probably listening and thinking, they're not quite sure the context from which we speak. So up here in far north Queensland, there's really not many people up here. We're talking about a small populations in each little town up here. So the town of Ravenshoe, which will be directly impacted by the Chulumbin wind development, that only has 1,400 people, and it's a pretty, I would say, I guess, low socioeconomic area where people, it's got pretty high unemployment, unfortunately. So people may be tempted by the offer of jobs, but can you believe with a wind development of 94 turbines, there are only 10 to 15 long-term jobs on offer with this development? So I personally find that quite shocking that you can clear thousands of acres of wilderness and only offer up a handful of jobs, and a lot of those are technical positions which will probably go to people in from Brisbane who'll probably fly in and fly out for their jobs. And also I just want to paint a picture of that. We talked about gliders, and I would love the listeners to have a mental image of the greater glider. So we're talking about the largest possum in Australia. It's massive, and it has ears like a teddy bear. So they're absolutely beautiful. And these amazing gliders are able to glide 100 metres themselves between trees in the canopy, which is quite remarkable, really. So not many people have seen these gliders, but we know they exist, and they really rely on us for protection, because you wouldn't believe all the land they're on. It's not protected. So all we have up here really is the wet tropics, a handful of national parks, but the rest of it's not protected. And this is where we see industry coming in to develop wind and solar developments up here. So yeah, we're really paying the price up here, that's for sure. So
I fully recognize that, and I haven't known, like I said, I didn't really know what gliders were, but I fully recognize the importance of non-charismatic species as well. I mean, it's kind of silly to protect cute species and non-cute species, but I do want to recommend that anybody listening to this look up greater gliders, because they are, in fact, one of the cutest creatures I've ever seen.
Thank you, Derek. Yeah, we absolutely love them. And to be honest, we're thankful that there is one traditionally, and I say this in parentheses, cute animal here that we can rally around, because goodness knows there isn't enough empathy granted from our government toward animals that are perhaps a bit less charismatic, according to them. Just on a side note, our federal government has released a list of only 100 animals that are worthy of being on this critically endangered list that that they're deciding specifically to focus on conserving. So really, our government currently is really pushing for global mining to come in and develop natural resources concurrently with the proliferation of renewable energy developments, which will be all throughout our country, but really up here in far north Queensland, we're taking a big hit. We've done a bit of background research up here, and we've realised that there are at least 109 planned renewable energy developments for our state. So I think at the moment we've got, not sure how many we've got in operation at the moment, probably around 100. So we're looking at a doubling of energy developments. And, you know, because it's painted as green, like, people are quite prepared to let the wilderness pay the price for these developments to save us, our way of life, our civilization. And, you know, this is just personally devastating to everyone who lives up here in far north Queensland, because we live here for a reason. We love the wilderness. We feel an affinity for the natural world. Every day we have a relationship with the wild beings around us. Personally, I live in a place called Mossman Gorge, and I have about three or four green tree frogs that live in my house. And every night. I feel quite blessed when they emerge from their hiding places to sit on my railing of my deck and just look at me. And I think, how lucky am I that I get to commune with the natural world in a way that people in the city, they've lost that and they can't imagine that. And their relationship with the natural world primarily is via their screen, via any old Netflix documentary, you know. That is people's fixes in the city of nature, and we are here living amongst it, and we need to conserve it. Nature can't live in this imaginary realm on a TV screen. It's a real place filled with real creatures who value their life like you and I do, and that is of the utmost importance to us. And we are living and we are fighting to protect them because they can't speak for themselves. So while we might sound a bit disjointed, we are so committed to our cause to try and stop this wind development. And honestly, the amount of research we have to do to find out any information on this is quite phenomenal. I mean, there's no transparency of process. And the lip service these big energy developments play to public consultation is quite laughable, because the consultation's always done after the initial attempts for approval have been sent in, and then they have to check the box for the public consultation. And actually, they don't care what we think. It's paying lip service to this idea of a democracy, which it really isn't. I mean, we are collateral, the humans are collateral in Ravenshoe, and the wilderness is the collateral to big industry. So yeah, it's a big fight, as you know, okay. Derek.
So before we talk more about both the development and the resistance to it, I want to ask two more questions about the gliders. And they are, what/whom do they eat, and who eats them?
What do they eat, the gliders?
Yes, the gliders, they scratch around the trees. I'd have to research that more for you, because different gliders do different things. Gliders, possums, I do believe they eat fruits from the trees. There's also, I know possums do eat little birds or nests and things like that. They will raid nests. I'd have to check on that. That's a question that I would like to research more for you.
And then who eats them? Do those goshawks you mentioned eat them, or who are the main predators?
Well, with the red goshawk, this is a very rare raptor. It's a tropical raptor. It has giant feet. So if you can imagine a regular sized hawk, if there is such a thing, a standard sized hawk with the legs of these massive feet that is quite unlike any other raptor. And that the red goshawk actually preys on parrots, and it's been known to prey on palm cockatoos, which are massive birds in their own right. So the red goshawk is a fearsome predator. It's absolutely lethal, and it's a courageous bird. And I don't know if a red goshawk would prey upon a greater glider. I mean, it sounds like they prey on creatures of the air. But I'd have to check that for you. But I really hope I'm painting a picture of just how remarkable the red goshawk is, and to know that their numbers are just in the hundreds, and that they've found a nest on the side of Chulumbin. It causes us great concern as bird lovers. And we know that the red goshawk, people know very little about it. I mean, it's very hard to find. And these birds, though, have been noted to travel in a huge range, like they travel for hundreds of kilometres. So they're quite hard to track, and that we have a nest in that site. Whether it's used or disused, we know that the goshawks can return to nests. They use different nests. They go around. It's very concerning. So they're one of our kind of, I guess, sexy species on site that we like to talk about. But I feel like I really must mention the magnificent brood frog, which for me as someone who loves frogs, it's quite devastating to know that this species, which is probably our least known amphibian and one of our rarest frogs in Australia, it really only lives in the area around Ravenshoe, that little township up here on the Tablelands. And they've never found a female of these frogs. They've only found the male frogs, and they're these tiny, beautifully coloured little frogs that are the size of a bottle top. So they're about 2 to 3 centimetres long, and they have a body that has swirls of orange and blue, brown and yellow, and they have a marbled black and white belly. So they're really quite stunning looking. And that these defenceless little amphibians will potentially be crushed by the wheels of heavy industry, and their population significantly impacted. It's quite devastating to anyone who loves nature. Yeah.
So can we talk now about Rainforest Reserves Australia? Tell me a little bit about the organization, and then also tie that to the resistance by you and or other groups against these wind developments.
Well, Rainforest Reserves Australia we are primarily concerned with conservation. We have a dual-pronged, I guess, approach with revegetation. We have a team of volunteers here who revegetate Lake Burrin Nature Reserve, which is, what, a 300-kilometre-acre property?
We've got all up about 465 acres, but we manage 1,500 acres for cattle, but also it's prime conservation values. So our ecosystems, we're regenerative, so we don't ever overstock. We rotate. That's our farming practices. And we plant probably about 8,000 trees, rainforest trees, every year. We expand our nature refuge. We just keep growing trees. And I notice our biodiversity of wildlife have actually returned. And, because it's cattle that we're running, well, they don't, I mean, it's not cropping. We don't ever put a plough to the ground. We just keep rotating and regenerating the soil. But we also keep the biodiversity growing and expanding, because we are being rewarded with wildlife returning to revegetate its sites, particularly once the canopy has formed of the rainforest. It's extremely rewarding. We love it.
And maybe we should talk about the cassowaries that we rehabilitate here as well. So who do we have in care at the moment, Carolyn?
Look, we've only got one bird was recently released, and we do have one in care at the moment. And Mamu is the name, because Mamu was found at East Palmerston, and that's named after the Aboriginal name that they use for a cassowary with that particular tribe. So, and the other cassowary that we've just released, that was Bundara, which is the Aboriginal cassowary name that they use in Kuranda, which is, it's all part of the wet tropics. We live in the wet tropics, and we back onto World Heritage National Parks, and it's very, very precious and special to us. Anybody looking for land that is a conservationist, if they strike gold, that is, and end up purchasing land for conservation that backs onto World Heritage Park, well, then you've hit gold, really, because you've got some wonderful projects ahead. You've got thousands and thousands of trees to plant And you're just constantly being rewarded because we have proved hundreds of species have returned from nothing, that is 12 years ago, to 120,000 trees later, all at different stages. The forests are all at different stages of canopy growth. And the older the forests become, with our help, of course, the more biodiversity that we're rewarded with. We're talking about hundreds of different species of birds. It's extremely rewarding. I recommend anybody to do it and have a happy life, in a sense. It's really good for your personal health and well-being to be able to share your life with nature. I think what we often discuss, Derek, is why is this happening to us? Why are our ecosystems collapsing and being replaced by big industry? And our feelings are, well, we think that there's a great disconnection between the city or the urbanisation of human beings and nature or the land or farming. There's a huge disconnection. And of course, a lot of the people just don't realise that the sites that are being selected are in the highest biodiversity in the world. And can I talk to you a little bit about the Greater Glider a little bit?
Yes, and we have like 5 minutes left. So I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about the Greater Glider. And then after that, yes, talk about how people can help try to stop those wind developments.
Yes. Well, first of all, we have the Greater Glider, and they are really common around Mount Chulumbin, eucalypt forests and woodland, so of eastern Queensland. And, of course, we're talking about the Great Dividing Range here. They're rare on the northern coast, but they're silent, they're solitary, and, by the way, they're nocturnal. They're a gum leaf eater. So that's what they are. They eat gum leaves. And the threats were always barbed wire fences, but I can honestly say the threats are now these gigantic industrialization of their habitats. The landing, when they land, the landing scratches on tree trunks. They have dropping size and shape of slightly flattened peas. So, you know, they're a very special animal that's very cute. They have massive ears, and I think because they're nocturnal, they must have an acute sense of hearing. And, of course, we also have the yellow-bellied glider. And, of course, their body length is quite huge. We're looking at about the length of 420 millimetres, which is 42 centimetres. They're quite big. They weigh about 550 grams. They have hind paws. They have big claws. They have ears that are black, fluffy, belly buff yellow. They have this gliding membrane that extends from the wrist to the ankle. So to capture them flying through the canopy is just spectacular. They're rare. They're nocturnal. And therefore people, because so much of our wildlife is nocturnal, what we're finding is people don't, they're probably hard to spot, but really nocturnal animals, that's their survival, because then the day predators such as the eagle is not such a threat to them. They come out at night time. So it's very interesting. We also have there the striped possums, the green ring-tailed possums, long-tailed pygmy possums, lumeroid ring-tailed possums. It's just remarkable. The Herbert River ring-tailed possums. They're amazing. And they only really are found on the high altitude rainforest. So in other words, they're very black. They're dark individuals. And they might be confused with the lumeroid ring-tailed possum, but they're also nocturnal. They eat leaves. They nest in tree hollows. So they need all the habitat in place. We cannot afford for these wind turbines to destroy their homes and their habitats, because our biodiversity is enormous, not to mention the nocturnal ground dwellers of these forests. We're looking at what are they called? What are the native cats called? The quolls, the spotted quolls. They're rare, endangered, and of course, for the caban construction, they were actually removed prior to blasting. That is totally unethical that they would be relocated prior to blasting. I mean, the effects to the relocation process, they always return. The Aboriginal people of Jerribel told me that they always return to where they were. That's their place, their habitat. So for them to be removed and relocated just so they can blast the site or comply somehow so they get a tick and flick approval is unethical, in my opinion. And if Australians knew, are you still there, Derek?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. If the people of Melbourne or Sydney knew that our ecosystems were collapsing, if they knew, I don't think they would want these to go ahead, let alone being subsidised by our government. I don't believe people would want this to happen. Anyone who's pushing climate change action would not want our ecosystems to be destroyed for them just to have power. Energy. And by the way, the energy proposals are to be exported to other countries such as Singapore, China, possibly Singapore, Korea, Japan, etc. So it's just big dollars, big business, if only people knew about it. We're just trying to get the message out there, and it's very hard for us. Very difficult.
So with like in the last minute or so, if there's anybody either in the United States or especially in Australia, but all around the world, wants to help, first off, find out more about these wind energy installations, and also about the region and also about your organization, how can they do all that?
Okay. Our organization, they can help us enormously by liking rainforest reserves.org.au. Like us, follow us on Facebook. We're constructing a new web page.
In the meanwhile, they are more than welcome to check out our current website, which is rainforestreserves.org.au. If people are keen to support our mission, we could really use some help financially. So we would be grateful if they would like to donate. We've just donated money to the Magnificent Brood Frog Action Group, who are a tiny little collective of passionate ecologists here who are going out at night onto the grounds around Ravenshoe into the wilderness to try and get recordings of the magnificent brood frog and see if they can actually find the female of the species as well. So we are supporting those guys.
And there might be cause for legal action as well. And that could be expensive, but whatever it takes, we will do whatever it takes to protect the wilderness that we have left.
And I guess one last question. Do you have local allies in this? Because it seems like an absolutely enormous set of, I mean, this seems massive and massively destructive. So do you have other local allies you're working with, or are you pretty much fighting this on your own?
We've just discovered nature.org.au, I think maybe, or we're sort of on our own. We've got a community-based driven campaign in Ravenshoe. The Djerribal people, the custodians of this land, do not want the wind turbines to go ahead. And
it's a really interesting question, Derek, because we've found medium to larger size environmental organisations aren't very verbal in their support of us, unfortunately. I think it really is conflicting for them because they've been wanting renewable energy to combat climate change for a long time. So understandably, they're not so keen to align themselves with us, even though we are for the protection of wilderness. So we've found some of our biggest allies are actually scientists and professors who are up here. So we've had fantastic support from Professor William Lawrence, or Bill Lawrence as he's known. He's a world specialist on the impacts of roads in wilderness. He talks about impacts in the Amazon when they build a road, but basically a road allows the feral species in. He's been wonderfully supportive. Marie Treadwell-Kerr, a bat specialist, has been wonderfully supportive of us. And Dr. Tim Nevard, a specialist on Cyrus cranes who lives up here in the Atherton Tablelands, has spoken for us as well. So we welcome any scientists to get in touch with us, because their voices are the ones that are heard. You know, we're just little people. We're not, you know, we're not ecologists. You know, my background's in fine arts, so I really can't speak with the same authority as a scientist. So, you know, there's really a role for them to protect our wilderness now.
Can I be blunt with you? Okay. I'm just going to read out some names to you that are pushing regardless for renewable energy at any cost. That's Greenpeace. They have we're losing our sovereignty. And these global organisations are coming into the country. There's on the corner, can we get that document? It's a newspaper. I'll read out some of the names. Right there, right in front of you, there's a newspaper. And these are some of the organisations that are named, and they're not even here. They're not conservation groups. And if they could come on board with us, great. But Greenpeace is really at any cost. I've got some energy people that actually said it themselves, that they joined them to just get a feel of what they're about. And they just said, even if it's right or it's wrong, this is the way we're going, regardless. So I wish these organisations would either support us or support actually real conservation and stop putting wildlife up in front, such as 350 Australia, climate action, all these groups, Climate Justice Union. I mean, if only they would realize that destroying the wilderness and destroying our ecosystems will actually cause climate change, our water cycle, our, you know, all our local climate water cycles that we need, microclimates. It's all part of our transpiration process that we need, photosynthesis for our climate. So why are they pushing the deforestation to stop in 2030? We're just stating that maybe they have other objectives. We don't know what monies are being transpired, or there's a lot of money being splashed around. We're talking about trillions of dollars. If you want to follow the money, it's big. It's a trillions of dollar industry that we are fighting. And we're just little. Rainforest Reserves is really this little organization that really does need some help. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for that. And thank you for your work in the world. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guests today have been Carolyn Ems and Anastasia Close. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.